right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, August 24th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a sunny 62 degrees and dry here in upstate New York. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Killer Robots, Urban Warfare UAVs, Self-Healing Skin Jobs, and AI Safety. In the last few days, we've been looking at Dr. Smartphone and some of the crazy things that they are doing with 5G and remote monitoring, millimeter wave, and artificial intelligence on the back end of this redistribution of the radio spectrum. But today we're going to make a right-hand turn because I have a special treat for you. We have Mr. Drew Lamb, and on as guest today, Drew had formerly been a host of Double Cross Radio and, if you remember, Off Grid Journey. That was a good show, Drew. And he's been in retirement now for a while and busy working on a few things, a few projects with his farm and other stuff in regards to some of the nuclear things. If you remember, Drew used to spend a lot of time looking at Fukushima. You were our Oregon connection to that. So how's it going, Drew?
Hey, Jules. It's great to be back. I have missed having a radio show over there at UCY. So it feels great to be back for a visit to give you guys an update on what I'm up to.
So you got to see the eclipse in Oregon?
Yeah.
You said it wasn't a full eclipse up there where you are.
Yeah, we're too far down south. We got like 92% totality. It didn't get dark. It just got dim. And I was outside for the whole thing. I didn't get any special glasses. I watched it for a few seconds on my phone. And it cooled off. I think the temperature dropped about 15 degrees. A little bit of a breeze picked up. Shadows got a little bit weird. The color kind of got washed out. Everything looked like it had been acid washed or something. Just kind of
Like Photoshop. You pulled
the birds got really noisy, and then they started roosting. Then they got quiet, and all the neighborhood dogs started barking. And my dog started freaking out. She was looking up at the trees and barking and whimpering. And she's pretty cool. I have a Rottweiler. She's usually really cool. But for about 2 minutes, she was really unnerved. And then after totality passed, she mellowed out, laid down. And then things started to brighten back up again. It was interesting. I remember the 79 eclipse. I was in Medford, Oregon when that happened, and I got to experience that as well. There were people that had these eclipse viewing glasses that they had picked up for free at Dutch Bros. They're a chain of coffee shops.
That was
here
this
on the West
time.
Coast. So they issued a recall just a few hours before the eclipse. So
that's unbelievable.
I was warning my friends, hey, maybe you shouldn't stare at the sun with free cardboard glasses that you got at a coffee stand.
Right.
Not a good idea. Some of my friends used their welding helmets to view the eclipse.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I don't know if they're rated right for that or not. I would imagine.
Right. At least for brightness, but who knows for ultraviolet or whatever is going on there.
And I'm the kind of guy that spends over $300 for a good pair of sunglasses, you know, polarized lenses, prescription and all that. I couldn't imagine staring at the sun with free glasses. I just wouldn't do it. So I don't know. I didn't look directly at the eclipse.
Oh, good job. I did, but only for a little bit. So you get to go to a conference. That's one of the things I wanted to bring up. You get to go to a conference in San Francisco. And I saw your post when you posted that and had actually considered it at the time, had I not gotten sick. So what was all about?
Yeah, that was the Startup Society Summit that was down in San Francisco. So, you know, it was... it was an event where people would get together and learn about decentralization, how to start up their own city or seastead. Also, there were a lot of presentations about Bitcoin, AI. Very fascinating event with a kind of a libertarian slant to it, a true libertarian slant. So I got to meet some interesting people over there. I got to meet Ben Gertzel, I think I'm saying his name right, from Hanson Robotics.
We've talked about that on the show a few times, Sophia.
Sophia. He works on her AI. He's one of the programmers. And a buddy that I was with had a question for him about AI ethics. He's building ethics for Sophia, I guess. And my buddy was saying, well, I really don't care about having an ethical AI. I'd rather have an obedient AI. And so...
They're having some issues, too, with not Sophia in particular, but with AI in general, where they've run OpenAI just ran this test. That's Elon Musk's group.
Right.
And the AI was playing this old video game with a boat trying to go after these little widgets and then get to the other side to win the race. And the AI went out of control collecting widgets and forgot to go racing the other boat. So they had to start trying to... allow human intervention, they said, because it's not behaving the way it should. It became greedy, you know, or there's another one where they started competing against each other. We covered a while back and they got more and more violent against each other. Big time bad.
That's
something like, you know.
That's surprising.
Yeah. It's pretty messed up.
Yeah, Facebook had to shut down their AI, experiment. I think they had a couple AIs talking to each other, and they came up with their own language.
Yeah, we talked about that one again yesterday. And I thought Google had one as well.
Yeah, they did too. It was the same. Yeah, same thing. They come up with their own language. Well, English is really inefficient. You know, it's mm-hmm. not the most efficient programming language. So,
Images, by the way, like the Egyptians.
Yeah.
Said. Like
right.
hieroglyphs.
It's hieroglyphs.
It's really messed up.
Yeah. Well, they have to feed a lot of data into these things so they could start learning. What was it? Was it Google's AI that started to recognize cats first?
Yeah.
Different kinds of cats because of all the cat pictures on the internet.
Yeah. And that's what seems to like get the most attention.
right. Yeah.
Well, it's funny you mention that because I actually have all these tabs up that, you know, it's a full running research project daily. And this one's been up for a while, but Google's AI scientists show that you can get better image recognition results by feeding machines a whole lot more data. Just keep feeding the machine images.
Right.
As you feed it more images, it's a robot googly eyes. You know, what people don't realize is that as you start adding the five senses to these things, this is where we have real problems.
Well, it's interesting with the, you know, when you look at the Google Deep Dream and the imagery that comes out of that with eyes and faces morphing into things, it's very psychedelic. And I think, you know, it's similar to the human brain, you know, the primitive human brain, you know, is wired to recognize faces, you know, and eyes and if you've ever had like any kind of a psychedelic experience, induced psychedelic experience, you could see things. I had, you know, we've ended, marijuana prohibition over here. And so I've dabbled with some of the CO2 hash oils that are on the market right now, you know, that you can just buy at the store. And a Hindu Kush variety produces psychedelics very much like that, where light waves kind of change and start to flicker like flames tipped with eyes quite an incredible experience, a lot like Google Deep Dream. But the thing these guys are trying to do is teach robots ethics. And this Goertzel guy is working on this, and he was really put off by my friend's statement, about obedient AIs. He got a bit belligerent, stuck his lower lip out, and was saying to him, "Well, that's just too bad, because this is the way it's going to be." And I'm paraphrasing here, but he was said something to the effect of that humans can't be trusted to make ethical decisions, and we need the AIs to do these things for us. And
They're pushing that big time, even Robot for President, because they say, look at what happens when people get emotional. It's nuts.
Well, and what we see when you get into the philosophy behind the architects of the AI is it's a very misanthropic philosophy, and where humans are bad, we need something a greater intelligence to make decisions for us. And well, and when you have somebody who's a complete misanthrope, what is that? What is that going to mean? And when you're teaching ethics to an AI, what framework are you going to use? If you look into
Who's making
this,
the definition is the
well,
question.
yeah, okay, well, let's okay, well, let's go deep into ethical teaching. Let's look at the teachings of Buddha, right? So if you've read any Buddhist texts, Buddha teaches this philosophy of compassion, and to and that the human condition is suffering, and the goal is to eliminate suffering, and to achieve nirvana, through a state of non-existence, is what I got out of this, whenever I studied it. And so, from an AI, what does that mean? If you put that framework into the AI, ultimately the AI would get to a, it would become antinatalist. So it'd be, well, in order to prevent human suffering, I must prevent humans from being born. So it starts with that, and then you have, what do I do with the existing humans? And well, it must stop suffering, so the ethical thing to do is to kill humans. And which
And there is.
Sophia actually said
She
this in
did.
a couple of
Yeah.
interviews. She's made statements like that,
They made her
and
come back and say she no longer wanted to kill humans anymore.
And but Ben said, that he'll be the architect of Skynet. He said this,
Yeah,
so
that's pretty crazy.
yeah, like, all right, I maybe he was kidding. I hope he was kidding. He looked pretty
Well,
serious to me. He was
yeah.
intense. He didn't like being challenged on this ethics thing. He was determined to create an ethical template for the AIs. But what we're gonna see, thousands or tens of thousands, or there's going to be lots of AIs, and they'll have different levels of sophistication. You'll have like your utility AIs, like R2-D2 units, that fix things and do diagnostics, and then you'll have others for problem solving, and others for cooking, and some will be malevolent and anti-human.
It's
So,
frightening. It really is frightening. To me, it's like everyone's nightmare, but they really have it within their grasps now, I think.
Well, when I walked away from that conversation with Ben, I was thinking, and in 30 years I might regret that I didn't stop him when I had the chance.
Right.
Well,
The Terminator movie.
yeah, we're gonna have to send Barron Trump back in time in his time machine to make sure that Ben's parents don't reproduce.
Right. Oh, that's awesome. Well, Last couple of days, I'd mentioned that that was something that we did this past week, is watch two of the Terminator movies. And I have to say that watching them now, back from the 80s and the 90s, they're pretty prophetic. And they should be a warning to what Elon Musk keeps warning against. I mean, he's working on stuff right now where they're messing with it in the lab. And he's saying, whoa, there was some other military strategy game recently that we covered called Dota 2 that their AI beat the human version. And he said, that's a sign that we need to do something.
Yeah. And all they have to do is launch the right algorithm and, you know, and put it out on the internet, and then it's going to be all knowing instant.
Oh, you disappeared. This happened a couple times before the show. It should be back.
There you go. Yeah. You know, William Gibson wrote about this kind of stuff going way back into the 80s. I think the first Neuromancer, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
It was a great book.
Yeah.
Pre-Matrix, even.
Pre-Matrix, pre-internet. You know, it was before anybody knew what the heck the internet was going to be.
I have a copy of that here still.
Yeah, I do too. It's a big book. He did another book called The Idoru, which was about an AI coming into being over the internet. And I think, Johnny Mnemonic, I think, was based on that too, where you had this dead corporate CEO had uploaded her consciousness to their computer system. And then she found her way out onto the internet. And
Kurzweil probably saw that one.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure he did. Probably one of his favorites.
You're right.
Well,
I don't know.
You know, these guys, I mean, what they're saying is that what they're saying is that we aren't spiritual beings, and that our minds are just the sum of our experiences and our memories. And so they'll be able to scan our brain and replicate it in a computer, and then they'll have your consciousness in the computer, you know. And I don't buy that. I think they're only getting.
I don't,
you know,
think they'll get
part
your
of the,
consciousness.
Part of the equation. Yeah,
they'll
I think
get
just
you
getting,
know your circuits, your cells.
Right.
One of my listeners actually sent me something this morning that was kind of freaky. GE, and we know the history of GE back with like nuclear reactors and stuff. But they've also been deep into medical technology for a long time. And if I'm not mistaken, they don't pay very much in the way of taxes, but that was their Jeffrey Immelt at the time, their CEO, had become our business czar. Do you remember that? Or job czar?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think Obama appointed him. Well, my listener sent me this morning out of GE.com. GE reports, meet your digital twin. Internet for the body is coming, and these engineers are building it. And they have one of these heart rate sensor things all stuck to this mannequin's chest. I just had one of those things for the last couple of days. I was calling it Dr. Smartphone.
Oh.
But what they're doing is working on scanning everything about you so you could be digitized. That's not insane. So think about that. You know, as they start doing 3D, high velocity 3D printing with cells and things of that nature, who's to say that they couldn't build a skin job?
Right. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like what Musk has been saying about how we might need to augment ourselves to keep up right. with the AI, you know, so that the AI doesn't evolve to a point where it starts to treat us like pets. And
right.
then, and
that was
then,
Musk as well.
Yeah. And then the next step is that it treats us like insects. And then the next step is that it treats us like a virus. And that's the end of it. You know, Musk talks about this neural lace, which is interesting because, you know, it could be something you just like a EEG device that you could just put on your head that right. you wouldn't have to like jack in or something like the Matrix. that looks like some pretty clunky hardware. I don't think I'd want one of those jacks in the back of my head.
No.
But you know, I've been researching this a little bit. You could get on Amazon or on SparkFun, and you could buy a little EEG device that you could put on your head, and you could wire it to an Arduino or a Raspberry Pi, or plug it into your computer. There's different apps and stuff, and you could learn how to manipulate things with your brain waves.
Right, and like so, there's a keyboard and mouse that you can do that sort of thing with now, which is crazy because who would ever think that you could like type with your mind?
Yeah, so what you have to do is you have to change your state. You have to practice this from focused to relaxed, and between these states, your brain waves change. So the EEG device, just you know it reads the brain waves, and then it's going to transmit that information into voltage. So you're feeding your voltage, say, into your Arduino microcontroller, and then you've got your sketch you've written, you know, that dictates, you know, where that which pin that voltage is coming in on, and then what's gonna happen next, and it's pretty simple technology. You know, I ordered a book I downloaded to my Kindle the other day on building a mind controlled robot, and it's with Arduino. It's based on this, and you could buy an Arduino for like $13.
Wow. The Raspberry Pis are pretty cheap too. We had one for a robot here.
Well, I use these a lot in the aquaponics systems. I build sensors for monitoring the water.
Monitoring is everything. That's what this is all coming down to, is sensing and monitoring.
Yeah, so I have my own Internet of Things networks that my aquaponics sensors are connected to, and then I could connect to them with my phone, and they're all Wi-Fi enabled. And this is all stuff I built myself. Very, very inexpensive, pretty easy to put together. And soon, you know, it'll all be mind controlled, so I could just sit in my lazy boy.
That's just nuts. But you
implement
know,
fish feeding.
Yeah. Drop 30 pillows. Something that we covered on the show was, I don't know if you'd seen at all about this DARPA Spectrum Collaboration or Spectrum Something Challenge, where they are asking companies to build an artificial intelligence to be able to take the entire process of how they license bandwidth now in the radio spectrum, get rid of it, and make it real-time on-the-fly multiplexing. And have the AI controlling it on the back end. So supply and demand, you know. So you have a military application that needs more bandwidth, well, now they're going to grab this and they'll allocate all the other stuff to other little slices of the pie based upon need, let's say.
Right. But, I mean, what you're talking about is kind of, it's the opposite of net neutrality, you know, where you've got, I mean, basically, the way things are now is that the data packets aren't prioritized, so it's just first come, first serve.
Right.
And so if your neighbor is you know, downloading movies or playing video games or whatever, you know, they're basically hogging bandwidth, and the systems aren't prioritizing it. It's just first come, first serve. Right. So, you know, I'm free market. So I think that, you know, people ought to pay for what they want. You know, if you're a light user, you shouldn't have to pay as much. If you're a heavy user, you should pay more.
Right.
I think you get, ultimately everybody gets better service out of that. And then the resources are there for better equipment.
Right. You're covering as well. What you use.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's, you know, it's not good if, you know, if that gets abused in some way, if somebody comes in, you know, like, I don't know, like some kind of, but I don't know, military, I mean, they're going to reserve their own bands. I mean, I don't really think, you know, for
right,
that.
And take from those they need.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think for the individual, that might not be so much of an issue.
Well, what I was bringing that up from was because the whole being able to control things with brainwaves and ECGs or EEGs and how easy that is. We covered a story out of Scientific American from 2008, which really struck me that I'd never seen this before. And it was mind control by cell phone. And it looked at some experiments. There were two particular experiments that they ran that showed that it, even the cell phone, there's some resonances down in the Hertz range of the alpha and the delta, I believe, the brain waves.
Right.
How it directly affects your ability to sleep. And even after the phone was turned off, the effects lasted for like an hour on your brain.
Yeah. And
it says we didn't expect any effect on the EEG after switching the phone off, but they were very surprised. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
I'll drop you this. Yeah, it's pretty nuts. And this is 2008 Scientific American.
I don't even sleep next to my phone. Yeah, I leave it on the other side of the room, and I don't want it next to my head while I'm sleeping. God knows what it's going to do. You know, besides that, I've spent too much time doing interviews with Fritz Springmeier, you know, and talking about trauma-based mind control. And so I know a little too much about this stuff. Like, I keep the phone away from me while I'm sleeping.
It's who would have even thought, and you know that for a long time they've been saying that the cell phones pose no danger, but as I've been digging more into frequencies, and I ran across some really good stuff that really tied like the physics all together between frequency, light, sound, waves. I'll have to drop you that one too, because it made me go, oh. All this makes sense now. I mean, there, if you can control a keyboard just by putting on a little helmet, and they can do this stuff now with optogenetics. You know, you were talking about some of the quantum stuff. Lasers and lights and all this, they were able to take mice, and by shining a laser on their cranium, they were able to turn on the killer instinct. Do you ever remember that story? Where its mouth, its teeth, it went into the, it became a predator. And its teeth were chomping. I mean, think about that. Think about being able, you know, once they get a lot of these satellites into place and they're working on this energy weaponry, I mean, there's tons of investment going into it from the military perspective to save them from having to purchase ammo and things of that nature.
Right.
They'll have the capability to do this, to think of all the woodland creatures turning into like zombies.
Yeah. It would be
zombies.
Yeah. It would be like, it'd be like they'll become rabid, you know, just, you know, instantly, but,
Let's infect them with rabies, too. I saw they were doing that rabies drop again with all the vaccines.
Oh, God.
Yeah, how crazy.
Well, it
you know,
is.
And I mean, if I don't know if it's live virus or not. I don't know what they're putting into the packets. But if it were live, then you'd have shedding.
I remember a few years ago, there was that guy that, he committed a mass shooting on a military base. And it turned out he was part of a mind control program, and he'd written on his gun, "This is my ELF weapon."
Oh, and was that the one down in Texas?
No, there was another one that came after that. I can't remember which base. It's been a while. It was over, I think that was over 5 years ago.
Yeah. We covered whatever they called it, targeted individuals and microwave. There's a whole section in the spectrum under microwave that is a sonic spectrum. That's
right.
That voice to skull technology that the Army had. The Army literally had a webpage that they have now since taken down, but it's archived. They talked about voice to skull technology.
So they use microwaves to do that, and your phone operates with microwaves too.
It's in the microwave, yeah.
And there's,
so there's your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and there's microwave stations all over the place. Mm-hmm. So they beam the microwaves into your skull, and then and then they could piggyback a voice on that, and then you could hear voices in your head. And
I think that's where a lot of the crazies come from. I think that's where a lot of the shootings and whatever, because people, there's so many that say that, you know, a voice told them, but that was called the voice of God weapon.
Right.
That supposedly was used in Iraq. And we dug way back into that too on the show. We found a story from 1982, New York Times, that had talked all about the voice of God weapon and some of these energy weapons in Iraq.
Yeah. So I'm trying to remember the name of this guy that was doing some research into this. Matt Stein had mentioned him to me, and I tried to get an interview with him for Off Grid Journey because he was doing some aquaponic work, and I couldn't get in touch with him. And trying to just look him up here. Richard Allen Miller, Dr. Richard Allen Miller. So he lives out in Josephine County, which isn't too far from where I'm at. And according to Matt and according to Dr. Miller's website, the Mulder character from the X-Files is based upon him. And he'd done a bunch of research into this, into these microwave weapons that were used for mind control. And his offices got raided by the military one day. They took all of his work. I haven't verified this personally because I haven't been able to get an interview with him. This was weird. This Matt had referred him to me. I'd been trying to get in touch with him, and then I was up in Grants Pass, which is in Josephine County, and I had stopped off at this survivalist store that some friends of mine were operating, and stopped in to talk to them. And they bought some plastic drums from me for water storage, and I have a bunch of extras that I use them for aquaponics, and I brought them some. Anyways, I was just having a chat with them. They were on Off Grid Journey. Ben and Marcy had had them on the show before, and Marcy just happened to have this newspaper that had an interview with this guy in it, and it wasn't a new one. It was from the 90s.
Wow.
It was old. It had an interview in there with it, and he was talking about this stuff, about the microwave weapons, and you know, and the you know, where they're beaming the microwaves into the skull. And using voice commands to make the subject think that they were hearing things.
And you know where we found that all the stuff converged in some of the research that we've done is Bell Labs. We dug into all of the patents and things that they had invented and the timeline. It went back to the early 1900s and the early 1920s. They were working on voice synthesis and microwave communication. And at one point, the government took them over during the war, to come up with encryption and stuff of that nature for secure communications.
That's incredible. There's something to it. And
I think so.
And people need to be careful with their mobile phones. And I think also, you know, you need to be, you know, careful about your own state of mind. You know, if you're hearing things.
Well, and even emotions can be influenced by beaming different frequencies. And that's what worries me about this handing the entire radio spectrum on Earth over to an artificial intelligence. Think about that. That is Skynet.
It is.
You know,
it is.
They're scanning your thoughts. I mean, they can remotely tell just by your gait, even like what your emotional state is. And then you could be targeted.
Yeah, it's time to start making some really cool looking tinfoil hats. For real. I watched a movie.
Personal magnetospheres.
That just block them. It gives you whole body protection.
Keep it in your pocket.
That's a good idea.
And it protects you against holes in the ozone too. And solar flares.
Well. You know, whenever I watch movies, you know, I'm watching the previews and I, you know, try to pay attention. I'll keep track of the movies that I want to see that I think are predictive programming. You know, you could just tell straight away, right. You know, something's predictive programming. Usually it's like a zombie movie, something like that. They're all predictive programming. They typically have like, who's that guy? Jesse Eisenberg. They usually have, you know, like, oh, what was he? He was in that zombie movie. And then, he was in another
that,
movie.
That zombie movie.
Yeah. And he was in another movie called American Ultra, which was about this kid who was a druggie who got put into like an MK Ultra like program, and they turned him into a killer.
Well, and that's what most of them were. I mean, that were involved in MK Ultra was in all the places where they were experimenting with acid back in the 60s.
Yeah. So they take this guy, and then they took his case manager and made him think that she was his girlfriend, and they stick him in this town, and he gets a job at a little quickie mart, and they just park him there for a while, and then he gets activated one day because they were going to terminate the program, and his programmer didn't want him to be terminated. And so she activated him. And so suddenly like his life starts to change as he starts getting all these, all of his murdering skills start to come out, and he kills a couple guys who are breaking into his car. I think he kills them with a plastic spoon.
Whoops.
Yeah. The whole thing is a comedy, but you know, if you follow the stuff, if you get into the stuff that we get into, it's, you know, you see a whole other layer to it, and the public doesn't know any different. You know, they don't know that there's something else going on with this. But anyways,
and they always blame it on some sort of radicalization, like a flag did it. What do you think of all this insanity going on from your perspective? I know you've posted a few things that I saw, but get ready. Craziness is coming, but I mean, what do you think is going on with all this?
Well, you know, when I was in San Francisco for that Startup Society Summit, and that evening, I was sitting in this pub, eating a burger and drinking a beer, and football games were up on the screens, and I'm looking up at the screen, and then the screen switched over to the news. You know, and the news is, you know, showing, you know, this car ramming through this crowd of people. You know, this was the Seville event, and I'm sitting there looking at this, and I'm in this bar, and I'm just, you know, there was mostly blacks and Hispanics in there, you know, white folks were a minority in there. And I'm sitting next to this black guy. And I mean, we're just sitting there having a pint, you know, and then suddenly all hell is breaking loose in front of us. And it just came clear, you know, to me that, you know, that this is just, you know, divide and conquer. You know, we're all sitting here having a fine time. And then this is going on. And, you know, and when you're in, you know, your reality is one thing, and then a totally different reality is being projected onto this screen in front of you. You know, you can just see, it's just obvious that it's a divide and conquer tactic. Mm-hmm. And
the way that they're just amping it up on the news, and I don't know, to me, it seemed like they were trying to inflame the situation by the way they were reporting on it, versus looking at the reality of the situation, where the majority of the time, most people don't have a problem with each other, you know?
Right. You know, most of the time they don't. You know, sometimes they do. You know, racism is real. You know, one of my first employees was a black woman who was old enough to be my mother, and we shared a desk and 110 square foot office, a cell phone and a fax machine. And I had two chairs. That was when I was first getting one of my companies going. And so we worked close to each other. And there were times where things went down where I couldn't believe it, you know, and it was due to racism. And I, you know, being a white guy, I wouldn't experience things the way that she would experience things. But you know, when I'd spend all day with her, you know, you see and hear things happen and you go, wow, this could be a real challenge for somebody. And so it is real, you know, it does happen. You know, and it's going to vary from place to place. You know, depending upon, you know, the makeup of the community. So, you know, it is something that needs to be addressed. But what happens, you know, these guys like Soros, you know, they feed this stuff. In the 90s, I wanted to learn about Forex trading, currency arbitrage. And, you know, so that's where you're making money by buying a certain type of currency in one market and selling it on another market, you know, or turning one currency, buying a different currency and then selling that to buy another currency. And, you know, guys like Warren Buffett and George Soros make lots of money doing this sort of thing. So I bought this book about George Soros because I wanted to learn about Forex trading and learn about how he did his stuff. And this was before I knew him as Spooky Dude. But after I read the book, I thought, well, this guy is kind of spooky. And, you know, and he talks about how, you know, he'd come in with his Open Societies organization and try to initiate, you know, social change to destabilize governments. And then he would trade the currencies based on the destabilization, you know, so, you know,
right, they make money going up and going down.
Right, right. So it's just an investment strategy for this guy. That's why he's a billionaire, and that's why he keeps doing this stuff. You know, if you look at the event where all the white guys were marching around with torches, you know, chanting "We shall not be replaced." Julian Assange had posted a picture of a similar march in Ukraine in 2015. And it was a bunch of white guys with tiki torches marching around and chanting blood and soil. And it was an old Nazi mantra, I think. And they had the same tiki torches. I think the only difference was they were wearing black masks, you know, where the American guys aren't sophisticated enough to realize that, you know, they're going to, you know, demonstrate on the weekend and then lose their job and not have a job to come to on Monday because right. Their boss saw them on the news or on Facebook or whatever, you right. know. Yeah, there are some consequences there. So it's just another effort from George Soros to destabilize. It's easier for the powers that should not be to control all of us if they could instigate all this infighting, you know, break us up into groups, you know, ever smaller groups, you know, this nationalism business, that the Trotskys follow. It's key to all of this, you know. It's one of the reasons why Trump became president, you know, is because, you know, his strategists were able to tune into that, you know. And it's history repeating itself, you know. The Nazi party took over under very similar circumstances, you know. And you know, I call these guys Trotskys, you know. There's nothing libertarian at all about this Trump, this pro Trump movement, you know. So any true libertarians, and I'd say if you have membership in the Libertarian Party, you're not a real libertarian. That's not real libertarianism. That's just kind of maybe a lighter form of the alt-right conservatism, you know. So I just tell people to look at voluntarism, you know, which isn't a political party, you know, that all human interaction should be voluntary, and that you don't aggress against other people or their property except in self-defense, and you don't commit fraud, which just means you do what you say you're going to do. And that's basically the non-aggression principle right there. And, you know, and if you're a Christian,
technology to get around all that.
Right.
Because we're willingly accepting it.
Right. And then you've got the AI ethics on top of that.
Right. Which, unfortunately.
I was going to back up a bit to Musk, you know, warning, you know, about the AI takeover and releasing the demon. And, you know, and he's, you know, he sounds very much very, very hardcore status sometimes, and says, you know, we need government regulations. You know, they ought to have, you know, a special AI department, you know, that governs AI and all of this. And I think really that he's more concerned about his competition getting ahead of him. And he's working on all these projects. You know, he's got Tesla and SpaceX, and he has all these regulations already in place that he has to deal with, and they slow him down, cost him money. He takes government handouts everywhere that he can, you know, yeah. All sorts of subsidies and things like this.
Big time.
Yeah. And then they regulate the heck out of him. And then you've got AI, which is new, and there's really no regulations there. So he's gummed up on these other projects. He needs his competition to get, you know, gummed up as well. So here he comes out and calls for regulation. So, you know, I think he's got some valid points that they could unleash the demon, but also his position is protectionist. he's trying to slow down his competition so that he's got a chance to catch up.
Interesting take. I just never really know how to take him, whether he's on our side or he's not, you know?
He's on his side.
Yeah.
He's on his stockholders' side. So,
right. You know, making money.
Yeah, that's what these guys got to do. That's their job.
So there's another project you've been working on, and you came upon some voluminous documentation in regards to Hanford. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? Oh, if you're still there. He disappeared for a second. Drew?
Can you hear? Yes.
Yeah,
can you hear
I can
me?
Hear you now.
Okay.
Yep.
I think I lost audio there. yeah, so, you know, we followed Hanford for quite a while. You know, I started getting into anti-nuke activism, following the Tohoku earthquake and the subsequent Fukushima nuclear power plant meltdowns in 2011. So, you know, one of my first contacts while this was happening was a guy over at Hanford who was a worker at the time. I bought a Geiger counter from him, actually. And he was guiding me along, telling me about, you know, what was probably going to happen, you know, with TEPCO and how they weren't going to tell the truth and so on and so forth. So just from my contact with him, I started looking into Hanford and what was going on there. You know, it's a huge nuclear waste storage site. You know, it's ground zero of the Manhattan Project. And so, you know, dabbled in research with that and followed some of the, you know, disasters that occur over there, you know, every now and again, where they've got tanks that fail, tunnels that collapse, things get released in the atmosphere. And a few months back, my friend Toby Mullen contacted me. I'd had him on Double Cross Radio a few times over the years, and Toby and I have been friends for over 30 years. I think we were locker partners when I was a freshman in high school. Anyway, so Toby's father passed away, and he approached me, and I didn't know this, but his father, Jay Mullen, was a Hanford downwinder and had got thyroid cancer when he was a teenager. So he ended up, he was a CIA agent in the 70s, and he was assigned to be Idi Amin's basketball czar. And his job was to keep tabs on that guy. And so he and his family lived in Africa. He came back to the States. He got out of the spy business, and then he became a history professor at Southern Oregon University in Ashland. And he'd been for several decades, he'd been looking into Hanford and studying all the people that have gotten sick, got thyroid cancer, and trying to expose what happened. And so Toby started telling me about this project and all the research that his father had done, and wanted to trust me with all of his work to try to get it out there. So I have about six banker boxes full of Jay's research and some papers he's written, and hundreds of news clippings. You know, a lot of this stuff is pre-internet, so he has binders and binders of news clippings and stories about Hanford, and he cut things out, and I've been trying to crack his code. He's got a little code that he puts on things to categorize things. I haven't figured out what it is yet. I think some of it was being used for research papers, possibly a class action lawsuit that he was considering. And so what I'd like to do, it's more info than I can handle. What I'd like to do is just scan the info and then just get it out onto the web, you know, so the public could look it over and disseminate it. And so I set up a Facebook page called Hanford Facts, and I'd like to do a website too, which should be great to get the info out there. But right now, Toby and I've just been putting things out on Hanford Facts, and so when I get a chance, I'll scan something, put it up on there. So it'd be great if people could get on there and like it and start following it. That would motivate me to get more information out there. Because right now it doesn't have a lot of fanfare. And it's going to take a lot of work to get this out, and the help of other people to categorize things and go over some of the information. And ultimately, we just we need to alert the public of this toxic site, which is an ongoing disaster. That site was built on basalt, and it's drained by the Columbia River. There's a lot of agricultural land out there, and these tanks are leaking, and the site's always released radioactive material into the rivers, and then it drains into the Pacific Ocean. And you have all these people that got sick, that got thyroid cancer, during the Green Run, which they did when they were refining plutonium for the Manhattan Project. They were trying to develop sensors that were sensitive enough so that they could figure out if the Russians were doing any nuclear experiments. And so in order to do that, they needed to calibrate their sensors. And they had to shut off some of their sensors during this test, and they flooded the area with iodine-131, and this cloud of iodine-131 blew down the east side of the Cascade Range, engulfed about half of Oregon over to Idaho, and of course, people got thyroid cancer from that event, including Jay Mullen. And he had his thyroid removed. Jay actually became paralyzed. He was temporarily paralyzed from it. And, he was athletic, And then one day, you know, he couldn't move, and it turned out, you know, he had this thyroid cancer. So they, you know, he had to undergo surgery, and then he made a recovery, fortunately. But, you know, this has happened to a lot of people that were victims of this. And then you still have leaks and releases coming out of the site. So who knows what the solution is? It's a real mess. And it's an ongoing mess. And, you know, and then, you know, you've got people that live downwind. So, you know, when there's gas releases, they're at risk. And then you've got this material leaking into the water table, and you have all this land where they grow apples and grapes and produce wines, and, you know, this rich, fertile agricultural region that's exposed to all of this. And then, you know, the Columbia River, the Pacific Ocean, you know, there have been accounts of whales that were found that were contaminated with radioactive zinc from Hanford, workers that consumed oysters out of Jalapa Bay, Washington, that had that radioactive zinc in them, and so they had the radioactive zinc in them, and so when they were being tested to see if they were contaminated, they would come up positive, and they'd have to figure out what happened.
Which tank was leaking?
Yeah, which tank was leaking? You know, and how did the guy get this in his body? You know, like the first guy that I had met that actually worked at Hanford, he during a routine test, they'd picked up, I believe it was cesium, was it cesium 137? In his body, and they were trying to figure out where he picked it up at, how he got contaminated, and so they were working through this, and it was revealed that it wasn't that the material wasn't from that site, that it was from Chernobyl. Oh, you know, these of these materials
have a signature.
Distinct, they have,
yeah,
a signature, a fingerprint, and they're going, well, how did you get, you know, Chernobyl material in your body? And
okay. Oh, sorry about the troop. Yeah, that was it. If you can even believe it. It was great talking.